MPB is the largest global platform to buy, sell and trade used photo and video kit. MPB is the simple, safe and circular way to trade, upgrade and get paid for kit. Find out more at www.mpb.com.
Hello and welcome to the AV Performance Podcast for Monday, the 27th of February, 2023. And joining me tonight are regulars Ed Selly, Ian Collin, Jules and Doug. Good evening, guys.
Good evening.
Hello.
How is everybody? Everybody fine? Everybody's here on
Pretty
time?
Well. Yeah, all good.
Yeah, we're going to talk about what's behind me a little bit later on because it's a new surrounding. So we'll get into that a little bit later on because this week we've got quite a few things lined up. Tonight, we have an in-depth interview with Danny Tack. It's going to round off the podcast this evening, talking about QD OLED being not quite ready for Philips as they see things, as well as their new product lineup and the P5 processor, which is now in its seventh generation. So we'll be discussing that with Danny a little bit later on in the podcast. Ed is going to be looking at the Bristol Hi-Fi Show. It's still a thing, and it was back in person this year. So Ed's going to tell us all about that. And if there is time, he's going to review a Hi-Fi Rose product, a streamer. Doug is going to join us as well tonight to talk about spatial audio from Netflix. Is it worthwhile? Probably not for us guys or you guys out there, because you've probably all got multi-channel systems that you use anyway. But what is the idea behind it? We're going to get into that and how it actually works. And we've also got our usual roundup of TV, home cinema, hi-fi, gaming, and of course the news on all of them subjects from Ian. And of course we're going to answer your questions, either tonight's questions or questions that you put into the podcast forum. You can do that if you listen a little bit later in the week, which the vast majority of you do listen to the audio only version. So do put your feedback and your questions into the podcast forum underneath this podcast. We will get around to them. It is a new feature on the podcast. We go through all of your comments from the last week. So that will be happening. And hello to Nigel Henry. He's here every week at 7 o'clock. Nigel, nice to see you again in the live chat. If you're watching us live, then get into the live chat. It is open right now. If you're not, if you're listening a little bit later, podcast at AV Forums, or like I say, podcast forum. Right, so we're going to look at the feedback from the last podcast. We mentioned a couple of subject matter, and there's been some comments on that. So the MediaTek Pentonic 1000 processor, Ian, we had a couple of comments, and just to keep get people up to speed on that, it's been revealed and been confirmed that there is only two HDMI 48 gigabits per second inputs, where some people had presumed and MediaTek themselves had promoted the fact that it would be four. So a little bit of fallout on that one. So what have people been saying, Ian?
Yeah, I've had a few comments on YouTube. One commenter, Elliot Cole, said, I think the most important thing about the Pentonic is that it will enable more brands to reach more standards and at least be able to push the full 48 gigabits per second over two ports. He says that this will drive competition between the brands, which will bring down the costs of entry-level 120Hz/144Hz 4K OLEDs that come with variable refresh rates or low latency mode, and so on. He says that that, in caps, should make the insane monitor market try to compete, or at least we can hope.
Good comments there, Elliot. Yeah, I think a lot of people have got this two ports in their head and not actually realize a lot of the other benefits that this chip actually brings. One of them, Jules, is instant Kalman readiness. It's all built into the chip already, so any manufacturer can switch that on.
Let's just hope it works.
Yeah.
Because I had a grading monitor this week with Kalman built into it, and Kalman doesn't support it yet. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, there is that. Any other comments, Ian?
Yeah, Tarek Z says, or asks rather, why is it so hard for MediaTek to make a chip with four HDMI 2.1 ports? It's been years in the making. And adding to that, finally also coming on YouTube, somebody called Sir Auden, S-E-R Auden, asks, can you reach out to Marek and ask him if TCL is using Pentonic this year? Have we, and are they?
Yeah, we can do. Marek will be coming on the podcast in the next month or so, just waiting on their product announcement, and Marek will come on the podcast, so we will cover that. And the other question, I guess MediaTek are the only people that can answer that one. You know, the 2000 chip, which is the 8K chip, it has four, but this 1000, which is a 4K chip, no, it's only got two in this iteration. So I guess MediaTek are the only people who can answer that one. And whether we get an answer or not, who knows? Ed, you had a look at the Paradigm Founder multi-channel speakers. You did the review over Christmas, and there's been a bit of a comment.
Yeah, Al on YouTube reckons this should outperform Bowers & Wilkins. It's just objectively less aesthetically pleasing than the 800 series, my two cents. To better sell these 120H, tell us how easily we can recap the amps when they eventually fail. My only concern is repairability. It just feels like passive speakers are a sensible, safe investment. Paradigm's got a tremendous reputation for being able to look after almost all the things that they make. In terms of recapping things, that's sometimes doable. The chances are that actually the module card, the amp card, will simply come in and out on a relatively straightforward way. And yes, obviously it adds to the complexity of a speaker, but you'd still be looking to deal with driver surrounds and other sort of consumable items on a passive speaker as well. The way that they're bolted together, I suspect that you'd see a substantial amount of life out of them before anything needed to be done. And, you know, short of unexpected failures, which can bedevil any manufacturer, everything about them felt that they were in it for the long haul. So I wouldn't be unduly concerned, but I will see if there's any information on what the process for changing or at least accessing the amp boards is, and I'll see if I can find anything out for you.
Okay, excellent. Well, hopefully that answers your question, AI or Al, whichever it is. Thank you for your comment on YouTube. And new podcast format. Well, we have changed the podcast format for the hardware podcast. We basically split it into separate sections where we're going to spend 30 minutes on each, or if there's more happening in home cinema 1 week, we'll cover that a little bit more than maybe TV and so on. So it gives us a little bit more flexibility. And we asked for your feedback. So Doug, what kind of feedback have we been getting on that?
Good. Yeah, it's good. So we've had a couple of bits of feedback, both from AV Forums members. So Wreck-It Yats has said, I'm so happy that the weekly format is back and the split works so well. It's become part of my Tuesday commute to work, like a habitual catch up with old friends.
Excellent.
That's good. We
are
getting old, aren't we?
Yes, yeah, we are. Very old. We are all old. Toonami similarly says, seem to be much the same as usual, but with some clearer demarcation between items. The longer, the better, in my book.
Okay, good stuff. Well, thank you very much for your feedback. If you have any more feedback, then please send it in. Let us know what you like about the podcast and maybe some of the things you like us to look at and maybe add in the future. Before we get going tonight, just catch up with everybody and see what we've been doing over the last 2 weeks. So Jules, what have you been doing?
Oh God, work's been absolutely insane. Some 17-hour days in there for the last couple of weeks, last weeks. But this week, really excited to have been at another production company at Media City in Salford, opposite from ITV and BBC. That was really interesting. They've done some big programs. Calibrating their grading monitors. They're about to go and shoot a new season of their program. And when I've not been doing that, I've played a couple of games of football. One, lost one.
Okay. And are you training tonight?
Training again? Absolutely. You've got to keep it up, especially when you're my age.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure we get you away on time so you're not late for training. Yes. Ian, what video games have you been playing this week? What life simulations have you been running?
I haven't been playing as much as I like, because I've not quite been as busy as Jules by the sounds of things, but it has been quite a busy couple of weeks. But I have been trying as best as I can to play a new release called Atomic Heart, which is on Xbox Game Pass, so if people are subscribing to that, they can jump on it. Kind of too early to kind of offer a definitive opinion on it as yet. I'm quite liking it, but it's one of those where it's got a few kind of annoyances, and I feel like the best is still yet to come, so I'm probably still a couple of hours away from the good stuff. But yeah, it obviously has put my Power Wash Simulator DLC on hold as well. So at the moment, Lara Croft's manor remains unwashed, and it's bugging me. But that's something for another day.
Okay, good stuff. Ed, what have you been up to?
Well, my roof is now being changed. So the house is covered in scaffolding, and some bits came off today. I mean, it's all terrifying. Just big chunks of house come off, and they go, yeah, it's fine, mate. No, it's fine. So you sort of trust in the process. It's one of those things where I now have an insight into what it must be to be buying your first major AV purchase. You had sort of a crash course in jargon that until you started the process, you have no understanding of. The only difference being if you get it wrong with the AV equipment, it's a disappointment. If you get it wrong here, everything in your house gets wet. So, yeah, it's been invigorating. I don't necessarily recommend it, but it needs to be done. And otherwise, as I say, I'll talk about Bristol later on. I mean, it was just, it was surreal in so many ways. The Marriott, the space that it's in, is a very... it's a unique building. We'll leave it at that. And the decor changes only very gracefully. So it was essentially, it was like 3 years hadn't happened. You step through the door and it's exactly the same as it was. Mm. So yeah, I mean, that's all fine. So no, otherwise I'm just now belatedly trying to push through some reviews. There's loads of stuff. And it's obviously goes without saying loads of stuff was agreed at Bristol as well. It's sort of just pulling things back to a more even keel once my house doesn't leak, fundamentally.
Okay, good stuff. Doug, you haven't been around for a little while. What have you been up to?
Quite similar theme to Ed, actually. There's quite a lot of work that needs doing on a house that we're in the process of moving into. One of those things involves knocking a wall down, a load-bearing wall between the kitchen and the dining room. So I'm learning about the joys of local authority building control notifications and steel beam calculation. Yeah. And just as Ed said, learning lots of new jargon words and that sort of thing, and dealing with the terror of, you know, the house potentially falling down if we get it wrong, if the builder doesn't do his job properly. So that's been me. So I pulled out a kitchen from the kitchen in readiness for the new wall coming down, and had to learn how to
turn green and Bruce Banner it. Just, you know,
it was actually the guy we built our house from fancied himself as a DIY expert, but it turns out it wasn't. so lots of the things come off very easily.
Yeah. What was his name? Nick Knowles.
My bathroom is exactly the same as that. It's assembled in such a way that changing the toilet seat is a simple job that just requires you to disassemble half the bathroom. So, that's on the list of things to eventually sort as well. So, yeah, all good.
Excellent. Well, I mean, coming back to the whole DIY thing, we're going to do that a little bit later on in this podcast because there's a few of us moving at the minute and looking at prospects and what we're going to do with rooms. You'll notice that I've finished the cinema room behind me. That's until this place gets sold. This is my old flat that I'm working from and using as an office at the moment. And obviously the intention is to move soon, hopefully into another property. So we're going to come and cover that a little bit later on, but it's interesting to see, you know, we've all got a bit of building work or DIY going on. What I've been doing, TV launch events, I can't talk about till the 1st of March, certainly one of them anyway, but they're in Weybridge and it's not LG. So you can work that one out as to whose launch event I was at. And I visited an old friend on the way back, and I also popped in for 10 minutes to see Jules, because by the time I got to Jules, it was 10 o'clock at night and it was absolutely chucking it down the rain. So I picked up a new meter that we're going to be using in the reviews from Jules. So thank you for that, Jules. Also been at the football that weekend. I was at the Leeds United game. Guest of Hisense at that one. And it was interesting to see a team that I have no interest in. Well, two teams I have absolutely no interest in, and they had no interest in playing football. So it was great.
Congratulations, you made nihilist football.
Yeah, it was, two teams that are absolutely fighting relegation. So it was a really nervy affair. Nobody wanted to play football, basically, and they didn't. So... yeah, but it was good fun. And I've got a wedding this week, so on Friday. First one in a while, so getting a little bit nervous about it. And I'm not getting married, by the way. Family member getting married. But yeah. Lots of things going on, and you guys can win in a competition. And Jules is going to tell you what you can win and how.
Yes, you can win a Sony ZV-1 camera. It's worth £519 from MPB. And this closes at midnight on Wednesday, 1st of March, / Thursday, 2nd of March. So head over to avforums.com/competitions to enter. All competitions are open to eligible AV Forums members resident in the UK.
Excellent. And there's no previous winners at the moment, but there shall be some. because we've had competitions that have closed. So maybe the next episode we'll read your name out if you've been lucky in the competitions. If you haven't been lucky, get yourself entered into them. There's lots of prizes to be won, not just hardware. If you like films and so on, there's always a whole host of 4K and Blu-ray and DVDs sometimes that you can go and win. And we've got a new patron, John Richard Clements. Thank you very much for your support, John. It really is appreciated. All of our patrons who support us on a regular basis, it really is appreciated. Thank you very much for your support. It helps us do lots of things with the forums, with the editorial, and adding new bits and pieces. So again, thank you very much for your support. We'll be back in a second to get the show on the road.
If you'd like to support the AV Forums podcast on a regular basis, then why not become a patron? Head over to patreon.com/AV Forums to sign up. You can also make a one-off donation through the Super Chat or via streamlabs.com/AV Forums. All donations help us to improve the website and the podcasts. Thank you to all our supporters.
So we're into home AV, home cinema. That's what we're going to talk about in this section of the podcast. So let's go to news first of all. Ian, home AV news, what's been happening?
To kick things off, Marantz has finally launched its preamp and power amp combo. These were first announced last year along with its full cinema series of AVRs, but the AV10 and the AMP10 are now both with us. The AV10 is a 15.4 channel 8K preamp and processor. It comes with support for the likes of Dolby Atmos, DTS:X, IMAX Enhanced, and Allro 3D. While the AMP10 is a 16 channel power amplifier, pushing up to 200 watts per channel into 8 ohms. Both are now available with matching price tags of £6,000 a piece.
Okay, and I believe we've got them lined up for review. I think, Doug, you're going to be looking at these ones for us.
Yeah, I'm currently lining that up, and I'm very excited I am too.
Send it.
Yeah, it's my natural excited voice. I mean, I've owned two previous Top Flight Marantz processors, and they really hold their own against, you know, the real top tier stuff, Trinovs and the like. And this one looks to be pushing the boat out even further than Marantz have before, seeing as they're implementing Dirac, four separate subwoofer outputs, directional bass in there. It's looking like it's going to be...
What happened there? I got so excited that his internet is frozen.
It's just... Well, one thing I'll say, obviously Doug was talking about it. The one thing I will say at the moment, Marantz is on a bit of a charge. I do think their industrial design is, they're having a good phase of industrial design at the moment. And I know that we shouldn't be choosing these products on looks, but in a field of, let me just say that I don't think the AV processors are the most beautiful items I've ever seen in my life. Marantz is at least trying, and they should be commended for that. It's a good looking pair of components.
Yeah, they do. They do look very, very good. Doug, you froze here for a minute. If you're wondering why we suddenly went off on a tangent,
I did wonder why you all froze for me. I was expecting the reverse must be happening for you.
Yeah, not a problem. So yeah, that's the Marantz legacy. We've got review coming up probably in the next month to 6 weeks. So have a. Keep an eye on the homepage if you want to see Doug's review of that. So let's move on a little bit in the home cinema section, gaming news. We don't normally get that much in terms of gaming news, Ian, but two OLED monitors haven't been launched.
Technically three if we kind of add them all together. The first one's obviously, we talked about a lot of Philips TVs last time around. But since then, the company has announced the arrival of two new OLED gaming monitors to make up an all-new Evnia 8000 series. Largest of the two is a 42-inch 4K model called the 42MN8900, while there's a 34-inch variant, which is actually a QD OLED, or uses a QD OLED panel, which is a 34-inch model known as the 34M2C8600. The latter comes with the ultra-wide curved display to give it a bit of a twist on the design. Both models use Philips AmbiGlow technology, which helps to adjust the image to suit the environment or the ambulance that you want it to. And they come with price tags in the region of the 42-inch OLEDs priced at $14.99, that's £1,499, not £14.99. While a 34-inch QD OLED is at £1,149. The third model is a news story that went up today from BenQ, who've launched their first OLED gaming monitor in the Mobius series. It comes with a catchy title of the EX480UZ. As the name suggests, it's a 48-inch display. So it's an OLED panel, 48-inch display, which is quite a step up for the company in terms of its current gaming monitor range. But obviously, it comes with a suitably enlarged price tag. So this is £1,599, whereas I checked the site today and it's second most expensive monitor, is at £799. So it's a significant step up for the company in terms of what they offer. But it's a 48-inch OLED. It's obviously a very, very interesting proposition. So it'd be good to see if that's worth the money.
Yeah, it's interesting to see OLED now firmly moving into the gaming sphere. Certainly these new panels are holding up in terms of image retention and so on. So yeah, why not move it over into actual gaming monitors? There has been some question of QD OLED in terms of burn-in. So again, we're early days with that, but these all look pretty interesting and certainly something that we'll start looking at in terms of reviews as things go on. So yeah, thanks for the news there, Ian. Let's move on to some reviews in the home cinema section. And Doug, you had a look at Netflix Spatial Audio. Now, it's not something that probably the vast majority of our listeners or viewers will be interested in, because they'll already have multi-channel systems or stereo systems or some other solution. But this is more for the wider market and very much device pertinent as well to what you're watching on it. And again, you need the settings correctly to be able to take advantage of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Essentially, what Netflix have done is they've teamed up with Sennheiser and they're applying Sennheiser's Ambio two-channel spatial audio technology to a selection of titles, and they're replacing the default stereo track for those titles. Essentially, what it's trying to achieve is to convey some of the sort of immersive effect that you would get from full-fat Atmos or the proper immersive audio track, but to reproduce that using only two channels. It's only available to premium plan subscribers, of course. So it's one of the sort of many ways that Netflix are seeking recently to sort of squeeze as much money as possible out of its current customers. And essentially, the way the technology works is it attempts to estimate how you would hear things in 3D space based on the shape of your ear and the shape of your head, essentially. And it applies filters to the audio track to kind of to mimic that. I mean, that's the basic principle. It's explained in much more depth in the review, and it's based on something called head-related transfer function, which is just how, you know, the shape of your head and the shape of your ear affect how you hear sounds in 3D space. So all that's to say that it's slightly more clever than just a slightly echoey effect or a sort of church hall effect attempting to estimate a slightly more spacious sound. It's currently only available on a limited selection of titles, and as I said, replaces the stereo track. So in order to be able to access it, you have to be listening in stereo. If you're not listening in stereo, if you're outputting to a multi-channel system, that will report back to Netflix, which knows, and it just doesn't display the spatial audio logo, and it doesn't play back in spatial audio. If you can't see the spatial audio logo before you press play, it means you're not going to be hearing it in spatial audio. And as I say, there are about 700 titles or so where it's available at the moment. In terms of how I found it, I mean, yeah, it was good. I can't sort of hand on heart say it is miles better than just a vanilla stereo track. But it did at times, I was flicking back and forth between stereo and spatial, and sort of I had to disable my multi-channel output and then re-enable it to switch between the two through two speakers. And there were times where the spatial audio track did seem to have a slightly more immersive effect than the default, than just normal stereo. And there were a couple of scenes in Stranger Things 4 where the sounds did seem to project slightly to the side. I mean, it wasn't convincing, not in in the sense that, you know, I wouldn't for a moment think I had a speaker to the side of me. But it did genuinely at times sound surprisingly sort of immersive. One of the other good features of the way that it's applied is essentially there's a spatial audio renderer that sits sort of upstream from the content, and the sort of sound engineers can play around with that to rejig the sound how they want. So you can leave some stems, some channels completely sort of unmessed with. So you can apply the spatialization effect to the sort of the effects, but leave the dialogue completely untouched. And one of the sort of the more pronounced effects I noticed that the spatial audio track had is the dialogue did seem slightly more clear. And I wonder if that is a product of applying spatialization to everything else, but leaving the dialogue just untouched, yeah, and that sort of bringing the dialogue out slightly more. And that was particularly noticeable in some of the sort of Strange Things scenes. And that in a sort of weird, ironic way, might actually be the main benefit of spatial audio.
And it's certainly an angle I've seen being used, because there's been a lot of complaints recently of quite a number of TV shows where actors are mumbling. Or it's very, very difficult to hear what's being said in the mix. And you got to think that that's maybe been one of the goals of this system, is to make dialogue that little bit clearer. And of course, you got to also take into account the different devices that people are going to be using to watch the content back. So it's not just on TV, is it, Doug? It's like watching on a laptop or
anything,
some other stereo. It's capable of stereo playback. So you're going to get that effect. I use my laptop to listen to a couple of the demo tracks. And like you say, it's very much, like I said, spatial audio. So you don't expect any sound effects or objects coming at you from different angles, but it just kind of widens that soundstage out a little bit, depending on what the scene is. And it there's a little bit more stereo separation, I noticed, on a couple of the scenes. But again, it's very subtle in the way that it's done. And it's not in your face and over the top, which it shouldn't be anyway. It should just be there to help you enjoy the content a little bit more. So for those that don't have a multi-channel setup, do you feel it's offering anything over and above stereo, or do you think a decent stereo signal would probably give you the gist of what's going on?
I mean, there were times where it did seem to do something slightly more than stereo. And as you say, it was just that sort of widening of the soundstage and projecting some of the effects slightly, the sense of things coming at you slightly from the side, which stereo can achieve occasionally. And I've certainly heard music where that's achieved sort of very effectively. But on the whole, it doesn't, whereas spatial audio seems to have achieved that like reasonably regularly. So I do think it probably provides something slightly more immersive than you know, straight stereo.
Yeah. Any other guys tried it out, had a look at it?
I haven't tried it. I'm intrigued. The one thing that did put my interest there was Doug talking about head-related transfer function, because the last time I heard anyone talk about that was DCS, when I tested the Bartok. Now, the Bartok probably isn't exactly what Netflix had in mind when they're thinking about spatial audio. I mean, the latest updates to it mean that it now costs £20,000. but DCS was using some of the same theories that have been applied to spatial audio for their Expanse headphone system. And I will say that for headphone listening, that was one of the most impressive and unobtrusive bits of processing I've ever used. So the mechanics are there to do some quite impressive things with it. It's one of those things where it's hard to judge exactly the point at which you pitch it, because my tendency listening through a reasonably ornate stereo system would be to not turn it on and not make use of it. And then if you drop below a certain point, the ability of the equipment that you're listening to move things around in a convincing way starts to dip. So there's a weirdly neat sort of narrow sweet spot about the sort of people that were using it, I suspect. I mean, I can't prove that. It's just me sticking a finger in the wind. And then that sort of then leads on to how much long-term sustained effort goes into creating these spatial fields. But I'm perfectly happy to give it a whirl, and I believe that it probably can be made to sound quite impressive. I've heard the same mechanics applied to things, and some genuinely excellent results come out. So be interested to see what they do with it, and whether it finds a happy niche somewhere between the multi-channel and the straight stereo soundtracks.
Jules, you had a chance to have a listen to this?
No. Obviously in my cinema room, it's all multi-channel and everything. No, I've not had a chance to play with it, but next time I'm away on a trip and I've got my headphones and Netflix, I'll give it a whirl and see what it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay. So if anybody out there has experimented with this, you've had a bit play around, let us know what you think. You can leave your comments either in the live chat tonight if you're watching this live, or later in the week if you're listening back to the recorded podcast, leave your comments in the comments thread in the podcast forum at AV Forums. Right, let's move things on a little bit. Thank you very much, Doug, for your review on that. And if anybody wants to read Doug's review, it is on the website, so go and find that. We were going to talk about home cinema. What is home cinema these days? And there's a few of us moving home, and quite a few people on the forums in the same kind of position, and trying to decide which way we're going to go with things, because we have a number of options. And Jules, you work professionally in this field in terms of custom installation and cinema design and all that kind of thing. And there's plenty of listeners out there that are probably in the same fields who are full of advice. But again, I'm sitting in what was used to be a dedicated room, and this room used to be painted black. As you can see, the use has changed a little bit. It's now an office, and I need to film in here and so on. And the last thing I need is a black hole, because I would need loads of light just to light things, because it would just suck the light out of it. So I've left one wall black, which is the screen wall, but everything else is now a Dulux. I'm trying to write Thunder Clouds, I think it's called. So it's a neutral gray, won't have any effect on picture quality from a projection system. When you switch the lights off, it's nice and dark. There's no reflections of light and so on. So again, that's a solution that I've come up with in terms of what I need to use the room for. And a lot more people nowadays are heading towards what we'd describe as a media room rather than a dedicated home cinema. So somebody that's working in the field, is that something that you're finding out there?
Yeah, it's very popular now. I've been involved with installations and provide calibration services to a lot of integrators. And a lot of the work they're doing are media rooms, some sort of hybrid between that dedicated black, dedicated theater and the living room experience. I suppose a lot of it depends upon, do you have a spare room? If you don't, then it's probably going to be the living room, and then you might be looking towards, especially to keep other members of the family happy, more of a media room situation. So you might end up with a large TV or a projection screen, maybe an ultra short throw one, because sometimes in a living room, other family members don't want a big projector hanging from the ceiling. So all of these aesthetics need to be considered as well.
Yeah, and again, it's deciding what you want moving forward, because we are now in the age where you can go out and buy a 98-inch TV for not a lot of money these days, certainly in terms of what they used to be priced at. I mean, I remember Panasonic having 150-inch plasma, but, the people who could afford them had yachts to put them in. We're now getting to the point where for about 5-6 grand, you can pick up some serious real estate when it comes to direct view TVs rather than a reflected image from a projector, Jules. So there's a lot more choice out there, which I guess makes it more and more difficult for people to decide exactly what it is that they're going to install.
Yeah, but that is more, that's certainly true. But I think also, you know, it's great because there's going to be a solution for you, whatever mm-hmm. your situation is going to be. We've got more options nowadays. So you've got the UST projectors, you've got your long throw projectors, you have your flat panels as well. So all of these can be a solution for somebody.
Yeah. So, Doug, you're moving house. What's your intentions? What is it that you're looking for in the new property?
Well, I very deliberately bought a property that had a spare room, or a garage. It's a double garage. So it's an unusually large double garage, actually. I think it's something like 7 meters by 6.3 meters or something like that. So it's a good space.
Massive.
Yeah, exactly. It's slightly oddly shaped. So by the time, and it's also a very quiet sort of rural area. So by the time you put soundproofing in there, such that I'm not disturbing my neighbors, actually that really reduces the room real estate. So that's one of the things I'm having to work out, is quite how much time, money I spend on soundproofing. And you can get, you know, it's a bit of a rabbit hole, but it really does need to be done. Otherwise, I won't be able to listen at sufficiently loud volumes in the sticks. And then there's things like planning what room correction you are going to be using and where you're going to locate subwoofers. I mean, that all goes to planning your room shape, right? Because if you've got subwoofers at the front and subwoofers at the back and you want to hide them behind acoustically transparent material, okay, well, then that's a lot of room real estate you've just lost to subwoofers. And I'm running a Trinov. So Trinov had just announced and demonstrated at ISE their new technology, which requires an array of subwoofers at the front and at the back. So I'm having to try and work out, well, do I want to make use of that, and where do I want to position the subwoofers? And that's before you even start to get to things like, what screen material do I want to go with? Do I want a scope screen? Do I want an IMAX screen? What decor do I want in the room? Do I want it to be so dark that the projected image is, you know, maximized, but my family's enjoyment of the room is sort of minimized because it's just it's a black hole when they walk in? Or do I want to compromise that on that slightly to make the room, you know, a bit more pleasant a place to be in? So these are the sort of the things I've been wrestling with. I mean, ultimately I land on the black hole. and my family will suffer for it, but
they'll love you for it.
Really, it's inevitable, really.
At least you're honest. Well, it's interesting that both of us seem to be on the same kind of journey and going in slightly different directions as well, because certainly the intention from my point of view is the house hasn't been built yet that we're interested in, and it may fall through and we might not go down that route, but certainly I've started planning at the minute as to what I'm going to use. So it's a single garage, and it's only going to be 8 feet wide by about 16 feet long. So in terms of cinema room, it's not going to be huge. But then again, it has to be my workspace as well for what I do for AV forums and so on. So there has to be some compromise there. But again, it's a new build. It's fully detached. And I'm
genuine
also
question.
At, yeah,
Phil,
go on.
If it's a new build and you're going to do that, are you actually able to say, please don't fit a garage door?
Yes.
That I'm going to immediately remove.
There are covenants in place where you need to, the door needs to remain, but you can do whatever you like behind the door. And certainly because it's a new build, we can certainly talk to the contractor and get them to board out and insulate it as a normal room at an extra cost, but we can do that. And we can tell them where we want electrical points and all that kind of thing. So you have your flexibility with it being a new build, but like I say, it's not a huge space. So my intention is that that's going to be my workspace / media room, and I will have an office that's in the small bedroom upstairs for, you know, my everyday admin and that kind of thing. That's the solution that I've had to come to, because at the end of the day, it's a workspace as well for me. It's not just a cinema room. And it's somewhere that's, but again, there's the whole house solution, which I'm looking at as well. So I have an iPad Pro. What can I do with that and some other bits of kit, and maybe hide some drivers and ceilings in the kitchen and so on, and have multi-room audio and
turntable in every room. And it's just backwards.
My intention, Ed, is in one of the rooms, maybe the dining room or the living room, I shall have a hi-fi.
Yes.
With a turntable, a Technics turntable. If I can get a Mark II, I'll get a Mark II. That's the intention. Some nice speakers, stereo speakers, whatever. But because we're starting from scratch, and again, this is why I wanted to bring this conversation in, because I think a lot of people are in similar situations where, you know, where you're moving to or where you live and so on, you have certain restrictions. But what can you do within those restrictions? And what can you do if you're doing what I'm doing, moving into a new build, or what Doug's doing, moving into a double garage space? What are the solutions? What can we be looking at? And if you're a company out there that specializes in this kind of thing, multi-room and all that kind of thing, we want to hear from you. We want to hear what we should be looking at and so on, because it's certainly new ground for me. I've always gone for dedicated room and a projector and a screen and a source device. I haven't looked at multi-room in any way whatsoever. So that's all new to me. I know you can do some fantastic stuff, and it's certainly things that hopefully will take you on the journey. Doug will take you on a journey with what he's doing. Martin's moving into a new space as we speak, and his plans are really quite ambitious for what he's doing. He's going to build a rig within the house that he can move around and move out with him without damaging the rented premises that he's in. I'm going for the new build route. So, you know, we've got a few different things to talk about when it comes to that kind of thing. And of course, AV Forums being AV Forums, we have forums dedicated to it as well, which I'm going to have to start reading and doing my research, which came in really handy because the wall color that I'm now using, this Dulux, I picked that up from the forum members. They'd done the hard work. They'd gone out and, you know, researched what colors were best and, you know, cutting down on reflection, keeping it neutral for picture quality and projection quality. So I used their knowledge. They'd done all the legwork and I, you know, that's out there. It's on the forum. So, yeah, if you're in this position, tell us what you're doing. Tell us what you want to do with your space and how you're going about it. If you're out there and you've got any suggestions for us in terms of kit that we need to be looking at or solutions, either for what Doug's doing or what I'm doing with a new build or what Martin's doing, get in touch. Let us know, and we'll all go on this journey and find out what works for everybody. So, any other tips before we get going, Jules, on what we should be looking out for? What's the thing that normally trips people up?
Any other tips? Yeah, I think that you'll have an idea from the size of the room what you can going to be able to put into there. You know, long throw projectors may not be workable in certain small rooms. I don't know. What was your room size in meters?
Oh, I don't know. It's 8 foot. I work in old. I'm old fashioned. Me, it's 8 foot by 16 foot.
But yeah, if you want to achieve you know, a screen size of something like 120 inches plus, you're going to need, you know, a decent throw distance, you know, five plus meters to achieve that on your projector. So if you're in smaller, you may not be able to achieve that at all. You'd have to go for something else like the TV, the large TV. I mean, I guess for me, I just love that dedicated black room, and I don't want speakers on display. Maybe that sounds like heresy to some of you guys, because, you know.
No, I think it's, for me,
baffle wall.
A baffle wall is the way to go. If you have the space to do it, nothing beats hiding the speakers away. I know Ed's not going to understand this one and think, well, I want to look at these beautiful speakers, but it does something to your mind, to your hearing, or whatever. If you can't see the sound source.
Yes.
It makes a huge difference. I completely agree. And if you can get away with a acoustically transparent screen like I have behind me, but I don't have the room, I'd lose the throw if I brought that screen forward to get the speakers behind. So these are the compromises that you need to make. I know that I could probably get 106-inch diagonal 16x9 screen in the space that I'm looking to move into. I'm fine with that. You know, I've had the big screen and the big room and all the rest of it. And sometimes you just you know, you adjust your needs to where you need to be, well, and what you want.
And you
to
can
be.
Also adjust your seating position.
Yes,
your screen, exactly. Your screen looks too small. Sit close to the screen. It's suddenly bigger. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is certainly a deep dive that we're going to go into. If it's interesting to you, if you want to find out a bit more, or if you're on the same kind of journey and you're looking for solutions and so on, then certainly this year we're going to be going through exactly what's what, and we'll see where we end up at the end of it. Dougie, up for doing some video and
100%.
Doing some diaries and.
I mean, I'm a way off. I need to. I'm going to have to pick Ed's brain. Actually, I need to replace the garage roof. It's asbestos at the moment, so I don't think I'll leave that.
There you go. So yeah, we'll certainly do that, Johnny. I'll certainly be making some videos and progress stuff and talking you through some of the solutions I've come up with. Doug will do the same, and I'm sure Martin will do the same, and we'll get Jules's input. And yeah, if you're out there in the industry and you can give us a hand with any of this, point us in the right direction, maybe mention some solutions that we don't know about yet, let us know about. And we'll certainly get it out there to the wider AV Forums audience. And of course, the Home Cinema Buying and Building Forums, go check them out. It's full of useful people with some fantastic advice out there. So go and check those forums out as well. Some people doing some fantastic stuff. I saw somebody do an office in their garden that they turned into a cinema. Amazing. Absolutely amazing what you can do these days. So yeah, we'll be coming back to this one. Right, so Jules, I guess you need to start limbering up.
It's only we're only at 7:45, so I've got a while yet.
All right, okay. Well, it would normally be at this point we'd say goodbye, but yeah, you can stick around.
I'm going to hang around for a few more minutes.
Right, so that's Home Cinema finished with. Come back in a sec, because we have Ed with the Hi-Fi section.
If you enjoy the podcast on YouTube, then please like and subscribe. If you're listening to the audio version, then please leave us a rating on your podcast app. We invite you to email questions and feedback to podcast@avforums.com and join in with this episode's discussion thread in the podcasts forum at AV Forums.
It's Ed.
Right then. Okay, hi-fi section. Phil takes a short break at this point. And I witter on instead. Right. There are bits and bobs of news from sort of both Bristol and pre-Bristol, which we'll crack on with first. Wharfdale has launched the new Dovedale Heritage speakers. And it's fair to say that these are big lads. Some time ago now, Wharfdale released the Linton speaker. And it's been an absolute sort of sleeper hit for them. They thought they'd do all right with it, but they've sold buckets of them. So having done that, they've gone and rooted through the history books, and they've made the Dovedale, which is, I have to say, this is a pretty large speaker. The other big difference is if you are a Linton customer and you're thinking, oh, well, you know, it's a useful step forward. Like the Mission 770, which I reviewed for the site last year, this is part of IAG's UK production program as well. So it's there's no getting around it. They're quite significantly more expensive than the Linton, but obviously it's built in house. It's built in the UK. I had the opportunity to listen to them at the show, and yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for a very large driver not working particularly hard. It's a big effort, the sound. They're immaculately made, like almost everything I've ever tested from IAG, and they are, I think, 4006, so it's a fairly significant step up over the Linton, but it is a big friendly speaker, for want of a better term. I on a personal level, I'd still go with the Mission, but I know a number of people absolutely loathe the looks of the Mission, so this is a rather more sober and restrained one. Something that IAG did do is that they had what looked like a Dovedale outside their room, but was in fact a drinks cabinet, and I don't know if that's going to be a different option that they're going to make available for people, but I was quite impressed with that. Elsewhere, we had Lima Acoustics. This is... I'm conscious that I need to be careful what I say here. This is one of the strangest product launches I've seen in a very long time. This is the new Quantum range of product. And there were some announcements last year, and then it all went quiet. And then they said, well, there's going to be more of them, and they're coming to Bristol, and that's great. And they did come to Bristol. I listened to them. There's part of the show report is on them, and they sound lovely. There's still a couple of things that we don't know, you know, little things like how much they cost and other trifling details, and exactly when they'll actually become available. So the time is nearing, but I still don't know exactly when they're going to appear. It will be sometime this year because it's Lima's 25th celebration. I will say that these sounded damn good. It's a pre-power amp, CD player and streamer. They're all built with the customary Lima Acoustics sort of, you know, small battleship school of industrial design. Loads and loads of features, lots of digital inputs, lots of analog inputs, plenty of power. So yes, hopefully some more information will feed out over the course before they launch. But at the moment, I can't tell you exactly when they're coming out and exactly how much they cost. So it's going to be one to sort of hold fire on. But as and when they're available, we'll be taking a look. We've looked at some Lima products in the past, and they've always generally impressed when we have. Last but by no means least, Martin Logan, who for the last, it's got to be at least 5 years now, I think, have been distributed in the UK by PMC, as well as making their very, very distinctive electrostatic loudspeakers. Martin Logan's had a box loudspeaker range underneath the Electro Motion called The Motion. And it uses a folded tweeter to give you an element of sort of the electrostatic sound, but combines it with more conventional drivers in a more conventional looking loudspeaker. I tested the old Motions and they were very good. There's a complete new range of them. And people looking at the podcast, either live or later on, will note that there are a lot of different models. Two stand mounts, four floor standers, two centers, and a choose your poison sort of effects speaker, which can be mounted in a number of different ways. There's a lot of different models. It's from about £1,600 up. I mean, the biggest floor stand is an absolute whopper, and it's about £6,500. The other thing that they've done is that they have essentially they've done quite clever here. There are black, white, and wood finishes, and the black and white finishes are absolutely of the moment. It's all gently matted, very, 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 very contemporary, very neat, very tidy. The wood finish is full on Back to the Future. It's a very specific color, and there's gold trim rings and things like that, and it just... It's retro. I mean, as I say, we'll have to have a discussion as to whether we're all six of the back teeth of retro. It's retro without being sort of Wharfdale Dovedale retro. It's quite cleverly done, and I think a number of people will find them quite compelling as a sort of aesthetic thing, because they are a talking point in their own right. And I would say that them being an American company with a heavy preponderance towards AV, they do understand a couple of things. I had spent some time with one of the chaps from PMC who's very familiar with the range. Little things like the center speakers have non-parallel edges. So depending on how you are mounting them, they can either be mounted one way up so they point up at you, towards you, or if your mounting point is more in line with where you would like it to be in elevation terms, you simply turn them the other way up and they have a flat side, so they fire at you, which is something that sounds tremendously simple, but unless someone's going to tell me otherwise, I don't recall seeing that before. I think that's actually really clever. So these are going on sale imminently. The first samples were there for the show, and more arriving. I'm going to take a look at one of the small floor standers because it's my point of comparison to the old range. And I'm sure that if Doug or another member of the AV team is interested in having a look at the full fat multi-channel version, we can get that sorted as well. It should be quite an interesting set of products.
They do look interesting. And a horn tweeter's on them, are they, Ed?
It's a folded, it's like, what's the
folded
phrase?
Folded motion tweeter.
Yeah, the high frequency accordion. So it's got a huge radiating area in a small space. And that worked exceptionally well. Last time round, I found, if you look at the photos on the news stories, you'll see that the floor standers mount their bass drivers very, very near to the foot of the speaker. And there's a system where Martin Logan calculates a bounce off from sound hitting the floor before it hits the listener. And I dare say in an American lounge, it works a charm. In my lounge, I found that the space, because it's a roughly square lounge, all hell was breaking loose, and I had to do some tactical rug management, which is not a euphemism. So I'll be interested to see if they have managed to get that one sorted. But it's a really interesting set of loudspeakers, and they do look really, really good in the flesh.
Yeah, I'm struggling to see the photograph here, but now you've said that, yeah, I can see what they are.
So, yeah, that's news. Then show report. First of all, before I talk about the show itself, thank you to absolutely everyone who came up and said, "Oh, you're Ed, and you know, I listen to the podcast." And you know, it's always a nice endorsement. It's really nice. I had obviously I was herring around like an idiot trying to take as many photos as I could. If I was abrupt with anyone, I apologize. Hopefully I wasn't too obnoxious. But it was lovely to see you all, and it fed into the fact the show was heaving on the Friday and the Saturday. It's encouraging. And furthermore, not only was it heaving, it had people who turned up, who were paid to turn up, who were younger than me. And you know, this is an exciting step forward. So I was guardedly I came out of it on the Saturday guardedly optimistic that not only as a show does it seem to have legs against logic and reason, but it does point to the fact that there's still a reasonable amount of health in the industry itself. I have to say this was reflected in the number of new things that broke cover. Obviously, I've written the show report. You can look at that. I'm not going to read through it blow by blow. I would do more of an overview. If manufacturers are uneasy about the future, they're certainly not showing it at the moment. There's a lot of R&D on display. There's a lot of new product breaking cover. Furthermore, some of it's outstandingly ambitious. Products like the Reagan Naya turntable, they were showing me parts of that. It's full-on aerospace sort of points now. It's zirconium bearings and machine titanium fixings. It's all really, really, really radical stuff. And that speaks to a confidence and an optimism that there's going to be a defined market for these sort of things. And that was sort of echoed across multiple products. We've covered that the Lemurs were there. IAG had both the Wharfdale Dovetails and the new Audio Labs, both the 7000 and the 9000 series running. The 9000s were running, the 7000s were on static. There's a lot of really quite technically advanced, sophisticated and clever equipment breaking cover. And it was, you know, there in spades at Bristol. Audio Lab is one of the interesting examples, and what worries me is one of the few examples where the new equipment was being priced at something I would describe as terrestrial. I'm still, as you know, on an overwatch of this industry. I am still concerned that we're not doing very much for people coming in at the first rung of this industry. We're leaving it to a very small number of companies to provide affordable solutions. Everyone else is going, well, we make this and it costs a bucket. And my sort of view of that hasn't really changed after spending 2 days wandering around the show. There's some cracking new product, but some of it is serious money. There's no getting around it. And I don't know.
Ed, is this a case of that's where the margins are and that's where?
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's also, it becomes self-fulfilling, Phil, I think. It's like, well, if we're not changing the affordable stuff as often, there's not as much interest in it. And it then sort of becomes, you know, it becomes less exciting to people. Obviously, in a more pragmatic sense, if you are feeling the effects of cost of living, it doesn't really matter how affordable hi-fi is, you're not going to be buying any of it. It's a survival instinct for manufacturers to focus on more expensive, if you like, recession-proof product in these time periods. But I still find myself uncomfortable that there wasn't a lot of things on display which cost less than £1,000 a box. And, you know, yeah, we cannot say inflation is X and Y and so on and so forth, but that's still a significant sum of money. Needless to say, I mean, I will say, though, that there was plenty of money being spent. Bristol's always been a bit odd because, obviously, it's organised by AudioT. You can take great delight at seeing something in a room, then wander off to one of the sales rooms and you can get yourself a show discount on it. And there, those rooms were busy and people were buying things. I don't know exactly what they were buying, but all the feedback suggested that money was being spent. So, you know, I'm optimistic. I still, as I say, I still have some concerns. Although I guess the other thing that's worth saying is that certain brands who are very good at fulfilling affordable hi-fi, Cambridge Audio has never attended Bristol. There's no point because they're sold by a different retailer. Project, as part of Henley Audio, they have moved to a big open booth arrangement because it allows them to show more things and it's all very, very, very smart. So some of the natural candidates for showing affordable equipment have just aren't exhibiting. And I think that makes that affects your portrayal, your perception of how things are. But if you are spending a bit more money, I mean, there's some cracking things appearing. And I'm going to be soliciting opinions both from the editorial team and from the readers as to exactly what proportion of affordable to aspirational, shall we say, of the items that, you know, feature in the show report and things like that. I mean, for example, we can take a look at a Rager Naya and nothing would make me happier to do so. But if you feel that £9,000 turntables, I mean, we did one for Christmas. I mean, that was dangerous. I ended up buying the damn thing. But if you feel that that's not necessarily where I need to be looking for ABF, do make your thoughts known in the comments section. I mean, there are affordable things to be looking at, and there's some more terrestrial items at the show as well. But fundamentally, Phil, I found that it was, you know, it's the same as it was, but it was the same as it was with lots of people, some fresh faces in it, and lots of new stuff, which is just weird for something in the West.
I think the reason Bristol is popular is because it's a known format, and it's been the same for 30 years now, more than 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a diehard hi-fi event. It always has been. They did change it to an AV event, Sound and Vision, a while back. AV Forums used to be involved with it. We did a few years there. But it's gradually fallen back into the two-channel sphere. There was some multi-channel, but not a lot.
Yes.
But it's just one of those shows that it just seems to attract a crowd, because Bristol's not easy to get to.
No. Nope.
The Marriott Hotel is unique. Let me just leave it at that. But I guess the way it's laid out as well is the bar is central to everything.
Yes.
In that hotel as well. So it's very, very easy to socialise. And I think if you're an exhibitor or just a visitor, it seems to be a very social show. And I think that appeals to a lot of people as well. So I haven't been there for such a long time, but I know if I was to go, it would feel very homely.
Yes, I mean, that's a fair assessment. And obviously, we've got some other shows coming up, both more central and in the north of England as well. And it'll be interesting to see what the turnout is. It should be pretty, you know, I'm hoping that it will be just as substantial. And, you know, it points to there still being interest and there still being the willingness to spend money. So we'll see what happens from there.
Okay, well, before you go into your vinyl and so on, we need to say goodbye to Jules.
I am
so
going.
Jules,
yes.
Thank you very much for your input tonight. We'll catch you again on the next podcast. And
cheers, guys.
Go and do whatever you do, break a leg or whatever
it is. I'll put one in for you. I'll dedicate it to you, Phil.
Okay. Thank you very much, mate. We'll see you later.
Cheers.
All right. Good night.
Very quickly, did you want to talk about the Hi-Fi Rose, or shall we move on?
Let's leave that for the next one.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, there'll be other things to talk about. Hi-Fi Rose review is up. Lots of positive feedback to that. It's a really interesting product. And if you are looking to put a streamer with your AV system, which has video handling capabilities, it's in a field of one for the things it can do. So if you haven't read that review yet, it's up on the site. It's dropped off the front page, but a search for Hi-Fi Rose will bring it up. It does things that no other streamer on the market can do, and you may, as an AV person, find some of those things tremendously interesting. So it's well worth a look. Right, music. It's been quiet start to the year, and then everything's gone bananas. So, album of the week. And I think this one should be hopefully of interest to Phil as well. Manchester Band.
I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but on my radar.
Slow Readers Club. They've been around for some years. They actually existed unsigned for some years, and now they're on a record label. This is where it gets complicated. Technically, this is their sixth album, although buying all of those six albums is not the easiest thing in the world to do. Came out on Friday. Knowledge, Freedom, Power. They haven't released, and I await someone possibly being a fanatical fan and getting stroppy about this. I don't think they've released a perfect album, and they still haven't. This has some cracking tunes on it. It goes a bit weird in the middle, and it has some idiosyncrasies, but they are trying new things, and it's a good listen. It's thoroughly enjoyable. It's on all the major streaming services. And you can buy it on CD, cassette, and three different finishes of LP. So they've clearly know which side their bread's buttered in terms of which idiots are going to pay the most money. So yeah, we'll work it out from there. But it's on all the streaming services. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's a decent listen, and it's impressive to see how they're evolving. Vinyl of the week is rather mainstream, certainly a more well-known act. Orbital also came out with Optical Delusion, not this Friday, the Friday before. This is a really impressive album, because you can listen to it and you can go, that's Orbital. It is such a defined sound. But it doesn't sound necessarily like Orbital albums that have happened before. They're not resting on their laurels. If anything, Orbital had their patch of we're getting old and we're not trying years and years and years ago. They had it in the early years of this century. And now, for whatever reason, they are rejuvenated. They are responding to social issues, be it the pandemic in this instance, and so on and so forth. And it's just making them far more wildly creative. I really, really enjoy this album. It's a testament to how much I enjoy this album that it has input from at least one of the Sleaford mods. And I normally would sooner rather eat this microphone than listen to them. That's a personal thing. Needless to say, it's all good. It's thoroughly enjoyable. Again, it is on all major streaming services in digital. You can buy it on CD. The reason why it is the vinyl release of the month, as well as it allowing me to talk about two different albums, is Orbital's vinyl releases dating back all the way to the 90s are superb. Whoever does them puts in the effort. This is a great pressing. It is whisper quiet, enormous dynamics, no noise, no unpleasantness. It has all the things you look for in a modern record. It's stamped concentrically, and it's very well attended to. I would say, based on feedback, unless you desperately want the white limited edition, buy the black version. It sounds better. It's just quieter. Don't ask me why. It just seems to be, based on the feedback of listening to a couple of different ones. It's really, really good. Thoroughly enjoyed that, and I'm looking forward to where this ongoing mission from the Hartnell Brothers goes next. Finishing off, podcast playlist. I say this every time. It's becoming a Pavlovian response. Tidal has come good with the playlist for this month. Motown Records, Black History Month. This isn't a particularly long playlist. It's 29 tracks and 2 hours and 2 minutes. But those 2 hours remind you just how astonishing Motown Records has been. Just some of the quality of the things. And I'm sure that my brother, who is rather more versed in the output of Motown, I would say that there's various things that they've missed off for brevity, but it's still a damn good listen. And if you're not, I mean, obviously, you know, we're familiar with the Marvin Gaye's of this world, the Commodores and so on and so forth, but just have a listen through and see what you think. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I've had it on a couple of times, was listening to it earlier today, and it's just tremendously entertaining and a reminder of just how influential Motown Records has been in the time that they've been active as a label. So yeah, thoroughly enjoyed that. Well done, Tidal. It must be said, Tidal's actually putting a bit more effort into playlists of late. They've come back into contention. So well done them on that.
Okay, another one I'll have to look at. But thanks very much for the hi-fi section, Ed. Is appreciated. No worries. And come back in a sec, because we're going to do TV next. So before we get into our interview this evening with Danny Tark from Philips TP Vision, a little bit of news this week, certainly today, Ian. Samsung revealing their pricing for the 2023 QD OLEDs, which I think everybody's interested in, and the Neo QLEDs, which maybe not.
Yeah, this is European pricing is what we've got at the moment. Save a lot of all, obviously all the details off of the website, so I won't run through the full list, but it does cover the OLED and the QLED range. There's a lot of models with listed pricings. Bottom line is, generally looking at things, are a little bit cheaper than they were last year. I think I counted up and it was of the 24 different size models, 12 of them were cheaper than their comparative launch prices last year. Seven, I think, slightly more expensive, varying across the board. Just a couple of headline acts. The S95C starts at €2,499 for the 55-inch, goes up to €3,299 for the 65, and the all-new 77-inch version is priced in euros at €4,799. I put UK conversions on the website, sort of direct conversions, but obviously that's never really going to be the actual UK retail pricing. So the assumption based on the same figures from last year is that the UK pricing will probably be generally in line with the European pricing, as a just swap the euros for a pound sign, you're not going to be too far off. Mm. Just a couple of others of note. In the 8K Neo QLED range, the top of the line, QN900C, if you want the largest 85-inch model, that will set you back a mere €10,999. More mainstream, the 4K Neo QLEDs are led by the QN95C. That goes up to €6,399 for an 85-inch model. Goes down to 55-inch, so that's a bit more affordable, obviously, at €2,799. But of course, I mean, these are still not exactly giveaway prices, but on average, things are going to be looking slightly cheaper than they were last year. So whether that equates into better value for money, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, all the details up on the website if you want the full list.
It's one of the things I've struggled with Samsung, the QLEDs, is value for money. They put a lot of technology in, but when you can get image quality like you can get from OLED and QD OLED, the use case versus price for me, it's always been difficult, I think. So it'll be interesting to see what the product's like this year, because the prices don't seem to have dropped that much for the main flagship models. But anyway, thanks for that, Ian. Right, so we're all going to disappear. Well, the guys are going to disappear now, because we have a pre-recorded interview coming up that we did a week and a half ago with Danny Tack from TP Vision Philips, following their launch event, which we discussed in the last podcast in Amsterdam. I managed to sit down with Danny and go through the product range and talk about QD OLED. Is that going to be a thing for Philips and so on? So that's coming up in a second. All I need to do is say good night to the rest of the guys. Thanks for your time, guys. And we're going to watch the interview now. So. So joining me is Danny Tack from TP Vision Philips. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today, Danny.
Hello, Phil.
It was great seeing you a couple of weeks ago in Amsterdam. That was your big announcement for 2023. You announced new TV models and a new P5 chip. And I know that P5 is your baby. It's what you work on all year. You're trying to make it even better. So we're now into generation seven, seventh generation of this chip. And it's a whole new processor this time around, whole new silicon. So maybe you can explain seventh gen and the features it has.
Yes, like you say, we try to improve picture quality every year. That means every year a new generation of P5. And this year, we're going to do two new things in the single chip P5 processing. One of them is the new super resolution that should result in clearer details and sharper edges. That actually already comes in our 8000 range with P5, so really at the bottom of our range where P5 is coming in, you have right away that feature. And then on top of that, for the OLED range, we do a new ambient intelligence called version 2. Last year, we introduced ambient intelligence 1, which was basically eye care. It was contrast optimization, and it was color temperature optimization. The first two remain in the ambient intelligence version 2. The last one, polar temperature optimization last year, was based on measuring the luminance level through the light sensor of the room and adapting then the white point in the picture to that light, that color temp of your room. And in case of dark rooms, we went to like a more warm setting. In case of very bright rooms, you went to something like in a cool setting. Now we can do it very accurately. We have an RGB light sensor. It really can measure the right color temperature of your room and will adapt the white point of your picture in line with that and in a very accurate way.
Excellent. So that's a brand new feature. And again, it's maybe something that purists might not be particularly interested in, but for everybody else, it's another way of adapting the image for the room that person is sitting in. So it will try and keep the white point correct. Now, is that set towards a D65 white? So depending on the color temperature of the room, it will aim for D65?
Definitely.
Yeah. Excellent. So anything else new on the 7th Gen P5 processor, Danny?
That's basically the two most important elements of...
And P5 is across the whole range this year, and it's a single chip for 2023. So why is it a single chip? Why is there no dual chip version this year?
Well, in 2023, we are doing two new platforms throughout the range. The bottom of the range gets a new platform, and then from 8,000 and up, we also do a new platform with the Pentium 1000 processor. Already doing two new platforms is quite a workload, and doing then the additional dual chip in that same year would be like, call it three platforms, and that's too much. Resource-wise, we can't handle that.
So, again, you're using the Pentonic chip. Is it the 1000 from MediaTek that this is based on?
Yes, it is a 1000, and probably you're going to ask me how many in my 2.1 inputs it has, and different than maybe some announcements that have been made by MediaTek, it only has two.
Yeah, so it's two full bandwidth, 48 gigabits per second, 2.1. Now, for EARC, are you leaving that on those two, or is EARC available on the other HDMIs?
At this moment, you are losing indeed one HDMI 2.1 for ERC, which is a pity. On the other hand, today there are only a handful of devices and sources that need the capabilities, the full bandwidth capabilities of HDMI 2.1. And for that reason, I think still two will be, for most of the people, be enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, and in the future, things like moving ERC, EARC to another HDMI or going to the full for HDMIs is definitely an element we have to look into.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, for the vast majority of users, two full bandwidth is more than enough, because 2.0 still does plenty of features as well and still handles 4K 60. So for most users, I believe that you think that your TVs are capable for the most general user out there who's looking for a bit of everything.
Correct.
Excellent. So no dual chip this year, but in your interview, that we did a little while back in Ghent. If people haven't seen that, then it is on our YouTube channel, where I spoke in depth with Danny over at their facilities, their R&D facilities. You did mention in that video that you had been looking at QD OLED and assessing that as a technology to possibly introduce into your product lineup. There was no announcement of QD OLED in Amsterdam, but is it still something that you're looking at? Is there a possibility that you will bring QD OLED to your product lineup?
Well, not this year, because the announcements we have done in February in Amsterdam are about covering the whole year. But yeah, definitely, it stays on my radar screen. We think have a marvelous screen with the Meta panel, which Al can come later in this call, explain a little bit more about what it does. But at this moment, it looked like the MetaPanel was a better option than QD OLED. But if, also QD OLED, I know, will improve in the future, and we will keep on evaluating it, and maybe next year it is enough.
Okay, so hopefully that keeps everybody happy with those questions on QD. So let's move on to 2023, your product lineup for this year. Let's look at OLED. So two new models that were announced in Amsterdam, two main models was OLED 808 and OLED Plus 908. So let's talk about OLED 808 first, and how does that differ from 807 last year, and what kind of new features does it have?
Well, as I explained already, it has this 7th Gen P5 with a new super resolution and the Ambient Intelligence V2. It also has now Dolby Vision 120 Hz in there. It has the new UI, which is covering doing less screen pollution and is more intuitive elements in the whole menu structure on adjusting picture are more logically grouped. Those things are new. The panel itself, in the 808, the OLED panel is going to be the same panel as the 807. So no changes on that one.
So that's OLED EX. Is it the Royal panel? Is that correct?
It is the the Royal panel that was in the 9 series.
That's right.
Is not in the 8 series. We keep the same panel as there was, and that panel is code name for that within. With our supplier is Prestige.
That's the one. So it doesn't have the heat sink, but it still has the brightness there. It's yes. It's still quite a bright panel. So that's
1,000.
So I mean, 807, great TV for that level of the market. 808 is looking to add a little bit more. And then you touched on a new UI. So this is interesting, Danny, because I'm one of those reviewers who constantly said, yeah, great menu system, but oh, we have to go through so many pages to get to what we want. And then when we're calibrating, the menus were popping up in certain ways that could pollute your measurements and so on. So you've taken all that feedback on board and you got a new UI. So maybe you can explain that for us.
Yes. So indeed, we recognize your input, but it came from various angles and from many journalists who are indeed using our TV menus for calibrating, for instance, was I do see it was a burden. And now it's actually a link with Google TV. The whole UI that is provided through Google TV gave us the opportunity. Well, we could have done it earlier, but then it would have been only for 1 year maybe to solve issues like screen pollution. Now with coupling it with Google TV, we get this screen pollution, for instance, is tremendously improved. We're going like in most cases in the old menu, we were almost covering always half of the screen. Now we're going like less than 20% covering of the screen for doing most of the adjustments. And for instance, in calibrating white points, we had a menu, you had to go back and forth all the time to it. That covered the whole screen. Now it's actually, again, only a bottom strip, and so you can easily navigate left and right to adjust the level of your the white point you are doing, like the white, the red, green, or the blue. Or if you want to go to another one, another color, you can do it cursor up, down, and you right away, without moving to bigger menus and swapping all kind of menus, you stay in that low screen pollution strip and can nicely adjust the picture.
And for normal users as well, it's a nice tidied up system, isn't it? It's fewer button clicks to get to what they're looking for.
Correct. You have a straight button, although not there's only a remote control, not a picture setting button, but there is you are pushing the home button for a bit longer, 2 seconds, you right away go into a quick access menu, and right away you have your picture button there. And also the whole build-up of the menus. In the past, we thought for good reasons we were splitting up like the easy, simple adjustments on brightness, color, and contrast in a very high-level menu, and then one deeper we put all the nice goodies in the advanced menu. But yeah, we were hiding things so far down menu structure for people that do want to use advanced. Now we actually we have grouped them in the five pillars of P5, being contrast, color, sharpness, motion, and artifacts. And you find everything in those chapters. It's much more intuitive.
Mm. Now, you said that that's linked with Google TV, which is new for this year as well. You're replacing Android as the smart system. I'm making the assumption, because we will get asked this question, Danny, that because of that, this is not backwards compatible. So older Philips models, do you know if the new menu structure will work, or because it's with Google?
I think at this moment, I don't think it's planned, but right. I need to keep some reserve here. So I need to come back on that one, which I will do very soon. I need to cross-check with people from our software development in Taipei.
Okay, no problem. So we will update the thread of this podcast when we hear from Danny on that one. But I know that that will be a popular question that gets asked. So let's move on to the flagship OLED for 2023, which is the OLED Plus 908. Maybe you could talk us through this model, because this does have quite a bit of new tech on board.
Yeah, I think the biggest highlight of that model is, and which we have not been talking about in this podcast, is the new third generation OLED panel from LGD called Meta Panel. That's a panel that now can create much more light, peaks up to 2,100 nits for the 3% window. Of course, it also has the 7th gen P5. It has the integrated Bauer Wilkins sound and this three-sided ambilight. So all of that for providing a unique, immersive viewing experience.
So micro lens array, some people out there might be hearing that for the first time and not understand what that technology is. So maybe you could explain what micro lens array is, Danny.
Yes, that's the key technology inside the Meta panel. And what it does, it's actually 42.2 billion small convex lenses, like the eyes
moth, mosquito.
Well, the moth eye. It's nice that you say that has been the name that we have in the past been using when we had our 9000 series. Now we're talking about Dragonfly, but Moth and Dragonfly is the same.
Yeah.
It's the way their eye is constructed. And through that, it helps also in having a better viewing angle. We all know that OLED has a very good or a much better viewing angle than LED. It is still not perfect. With this Dragonfly convex lenses, we are able to improve the viewing angle with 60%. But that that micro lens is also helping in the luminance improvement, 70% luminance improvement we're talking about. So going from 1200 nit peak now to 2100 nit peak. And that is because the annual reflection in the panel is now much lower. So all the light, or most of the light produced in the panel is now getting out. In before microlens, a lot of light was bouncing back and forth and stayed within the panel. Now it all comes out, and it gives us an increase of 70%. The last thing I would like to say about this Meta panel is that it also comes with a new polarizer. The polarizer is called Vanta polarizer. The reflection of that, the specular reflection, is also 70% down, so it's far less of a mirror than before, and it keeps the black level perfect. Normally, when you reduce your reflection, it might affect the black level appearance, but you know, all that should give a good black appearance, and so we do the combination of less reflection and still perfect black.
I've got to say, in the side-by-side demo that we saw at Amsterdam, there was a real difference there. It's like a black hole compared to 907 that was sitting next to it without the polarizer. And again, that just rejects ambient light. So if people are using it in a brighter room, it's not going to wash out the black levels. Blacks still look nice, inky black. Another really impressive thing was standing about maybe 5 or 6 feet away from the panel and waving your hand. When there was no picture on the screen, you couldn't see anything on the new panel with that. Right. So yeah, that looks really good. And of course, it still has a glossy look though to the image, doesn't it? It's not a matte finish or anything like that. The polarizer is doing the light rejection. It's not a coating that's on the screen, is it?
It still gives that exquisite look, that designish look, but without the disadvantages of seeing yourself in the picture. Being able to maximum enjoy what is on the picture.
Yeah, and is there any other processing that's going on in there, Danny? Because we've got MLA and you have the polarizer, but is there anything else that's adding a brightness boost inside the panel?
No, it's basically the MLA is the main technology that actually is much more efficient, let's say, and therefore also, but together with that, well, indeed, one thing, is that the external heatsink that was already in the Royal panel to make sure we do not have extra burn-in now has been adapted because we are going quite up in peak light for 2,100 nits, and you need to cater with that for that. You don't want to go to those bright pictures and having now again more the danger on burning. So yes, the heatsink has been slightly adapted to cater for that.
And again, your USP on all Philips TVs is Ambilight. It's three-sided on the 908. Why have you gone from four-sided to back to three-sided with the 908 this year?
Actually, we have already last year, we went back to all TVs became three-sided again. Mm. Because that bottom strip, many times people, half of the people still are putting it on a stand, are not hanging it, and then the stand, whether it's central neck, and especially whether it is central neck, is covering a big portion of your bottom bar, and you do not get the maximum performance out there. That's why we went for now straight. Full solution of only three sides, all over the range.
Yeah. Again, Ambilight, absolutely brilliant. If you've never seen an Ambilight TV, go see one, because it's a very interesting technology. It's been around for a number of years on Philips TVs, but it's improved yet again for this year, Danny, as well, with the, you can get down to the per LED level. Now, we saw that last year, and again, it's improved further this year.
The resolution is three times better than before. That is because now every individual LED has a driver behind, whereas before we had only one driver per three LEDs. And so the accuracy, the resolution in the next generation Ambilight is three times better.
And I just want to clarify a couple of points before we move on and wrap up. 908, you said 2,100 nits on a 3% window, but that's in your crystal clear, which is the renamed Vivid mode. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
So do you have any figures for D65 settings with that?
At this moment, not. But knowing that the native white point of the OLED panel is pretty close to what we're using in crystal clear, and therefore maximize the amount of peak that the panel can produce, and D65 a bit off from there. I would guess you're probably losing like 25-30% of that.
Yeah. And of course, as soon as we get the TVs in, which will be a little bit later in the year, we will measure
you
that
will measure.
And we'll have a look at that as well. Right. So just to wrap up, we don't tend to talk about LED, LCD TVs. OLED seems to be the real push with AV Forums members. But of course, the wider market out there, Danny, is again, a very important one for Philips and TP Vision. You brought in the one a few years ago, which was basically the one TV. If somebody was looking for an affordable solution with a lot of nice features on there and so on, but couldn't quite stretch the luxury models, that was the screen that you said as a company we should be recommending to people who ask. So there's a new line that you've introduced this year called Extra. So maybe you could explain Extra to us, because it sits between the one and the luxury models. So maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Yes, well, it's a mini LED range, which sits actually on top of the one range, and gives you some extras over the one. And as I say, it's a mini LED, means that the blacks and the brights in that, because of the mini LED, because of the segmented backlight, can be, you can have really deep dark, deep blacks and bright brights, which you cannot do with the one. The one is or HLED or direct LED and only has one zone. And also Extra, the mini LED, the color gamut of that range is slightly higher than what we use in the one range. It's 98% DCI-P3 versus 90 in the one. So also that. So better blacks, better brights, better color. And actually the Extra is, we're positioning it above the one, below the OLED, and it is not the intention with our new mini LED range to compete with the QLEDs from the competition. That's the whole idea behind it. It's more than one extra over the one, but not a competitor to the high-end mini LED TVs from.
So yeah, so you're getting mini LED, you're getting that zoned backlight, local dimming. You also get P5 on there, and Ambilight as well.
Yeah, a three-sided Ambilight, just like all the other models. P5, 7th generation P5. So all the nice goodies. We have it in two flavors, two mini LED ranges. One with Baron Wilkins integrated sound, and one with a normal 2.0 40 watts sound system. So you have there's a lot of diversity in that range.
Excellent. I do think it's one of the things that Philips TP Vision does very well, and that's giving the consumer choice. Even the luxury models, you know, with your P5 processing and so on, you give us the opportunity to have incredibly accurate images to the standards if that's what we're looking for. But at the same time, you also give people a choice to have something that moves a little bit away from reference, but not over the top and adding your processing power. So it's always something I have appreciated with your approach to TVs, Danny. So thank you very much for your time today, going through the 2023 models. Really looking forward to seeing them, and I'm looking forward to seeing mini LED as well. I think I'd like to have a look at them this year and see what you're doing with that technology, because I think it is an area of the market that maybe sometimes gets overlooked, and maybe that's a little bit unfair to overlook that area of the market. So thank you very much for your time, Danny, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Phil, and maybe next year we do the same thing again.
Excellent.
Have a nice day.
So our thanks to Danny for the interview, and that wraps up tonight's podcast. The next AV Forums podcast is the Movies Edition, which will be on Monday the 6th of March, which starts at 8:30 as well. So please do tune in for that one with Kaz and the team. And the main AV Forums podcast, the one you're watching right now, we will return in 2 weeks on the 13th of March, starting at the usual time of 7 p.m. My thanks tonight to Ed, Ian and Doug, who have already vacated the premises. But if you've enjoyed this podcast, then of course you can subscribe to the channel, leave this video a like. If you're listening to us on a podcast provider, if they allow you to leave a rating, then please do that. And if it's out of 5 or out of 10, top marks would be highly appreciated. Thank you very much for watching. I'm Phil Hinton. We'll see you for the next podcast, which is the Movies Edition, next week. Good night.